It's a great honor that I can introduce Rep. Sachs to continue in his bi-monthly shiurim here. Next month, Rep. Sachs will be giving a shiur on March 14th and March 21st. His topics will deal with Pesach. This morning's shiur will be a continuation on Inyanei Purim. And this morning's shiur is sponsored by Bryna and David Militsky and family, and Linda and Milton Franken family, Edith Blumenthal, Rus Bas Yosef, Olashon. Rav Sachs.
Last year we began discussing various aspects of Purim, and this morning I wanted to emphasize the element of Simchas Purim. To what extent do we assume that the mitzvah of Simcha and Purim is similar to that on each and every yontif? Or perhaps in many ways this is a distinct obligation that differs from the obligation of Issamachta Bechagecha. Rav Zsolti in his Sefer Mishnas Yavetz in Simen Ayin Tes points out that the Gemara tells us in Daf Hei Amud Beis the following Chiddush. Purim is characterized in the Megillah in two very different ways. Originally, we are told that Purim is considered to be a time of Simcha, Mishte, V'yantif. Ultimately, the Megillah tells us that Purim is Lasos Osam Yimei, Mishte V'Simcha. So at first, Simcha, Mishte, V'yantif. Ultimately, it is Mishte V'Simcha. What is the change that was adopted, as the Gemara explains? Originally, Rabbi Yosef comments that Purim was to be considered a yantif, albeit drabanan, comparable to that of Shalosh Regalim, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. Not merely a time of an Isser of Tainus fasting, or the prohibition of Hesped of eulogizing, but also a time of an Isser Malacha. One would be forbidden to engage in Malacha on Purim, similar to the days of yantif itself. And that's why the Megillah tells us not only Simcha Mishta, but also a yantif, pazit and isra malacha. Ultimately, the Gemara tells us certainly that was not adopted. Purim is not a time where there is an isra malacha at all, but rather it is a time of yimei mishte v'simcha. So at first Rav Yossi says that Purim would be comparable to Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, in isra malacha. We know that no, Purim is a time of an isra hesped, an isra tainis, but one is allowed to engage in malacha during these days. One would have expected then that the only difference in the psukim would be that originally Purim is called the yantif, subsequently that description is omitted. But Rav Zsolti comments there's another difference that you have in the pasuk. At first, the pasuk tells us simcha, mishte, yantif. Ultimately, lasos usam yimei, mishte v'simcha. The sequence, the order of simcha and mishte also shifted. At first, there was a primary mitzvah chiyuvav, simcha, followed by mishte, then yantif, and ultimately yimei, mishte v'simcha. As though to indicate, the fact that Purim was not adopted as a yantif with Isra Malacha did not only affect that element, but also somehow impacted on the very nature of the mitzvah of simcha. Had Purim been a day of yantif, simcha would have been understood in one way. The fact that there is no Isra Malacha on Purim teaches us that there is something unique about the element of Simchas Purim. When we speak about Simcha and Yantif, the obligation of Issamachta Bechagecha, it is clear, as the Gemara tells us, as the Rambam writes in Perek Vav Hilchos Yantif, there are many different ways of fulfilling the obligation of Simchas Yantif. Because Simcha is an emotive response that envelops and permeates the entire day. Simcha is not limited to a finite window of time during Yantif, but rather it characterizes the essence of the entire day. We know that ideally, when we have a Beis Hamikdash, Simcha is celebrated through Hakravas HaKarbanos, V'zavachta Shlomim V'achalta Sham, V'samachta Lifnei Hashem Elokecha. Simcha means to be all the regel, to offer and partake in Hakravas HaKarbanos. The Gemara tells us that Bizman Hazeh without a Beis Hamikdash, Ein Simcha Ela b'yayin. We have to rely on other ways of fulfilling the mitzvah of simcha. In fact, the machlokas between Tosus and the Rambam, whether simcha b'zman hazeh is a mitzvah min ha-Torah, or simcha is only a mitzvah d'rabbanon. The Rambam writes in Perek Vav of Hilchos Yontif, the view of the vast majority of Rishonim, simcha today is a mitzvah midaraisa. Even without a Beis HaMikdash, all the other ways that we attain that level of simcha, this is part of the Torah mandate of Ismachta b'chagecha. And Tosus writes in Moedkotin Daf Yedaldim Abeis, this is not true. Simcha min haTorah is limited to bizman shebeis hamikdash kayim, all the regal offering karbanos. Bizman hazeh the mitzvah of simcha is only derabanan. An important issue in discussing Rachman Litzlan, if a person would become an avil during the period of Yantiv, or the last day of Yantiv, which would take precedence, is simcha bizman hazeh a mitzvah daraisa, mitzvah derabanan, is avelus a chiyuv min haTorah, or only a mitzvah derabanan, a topic for a separate year. But the Rambam describes, simcha can be felt in many different ways. When we eat on Yantif, that's a mitzvah of simcha. And the Rambam describes, it's necessary to see to it, that everyone in the family is in that frame of mind of simchas Yantif. It means providing for one's wife, providing for one's children, whatever is necessary to see to it, that they all express that ideal of Simchas Yantiv. If Purim was the time of Yantiv, the mitzvah of Simcha and Purim would be comparable to this obligation min haTorah of V'samachta b'chagecha. No aliyah l'regel, but nonetheless there would be an element of Simcha that envelops the entire day. Once the Gemara tells us that this was not true, that Purim is not a Yantiv, perhaps one could suggest that something now shifted in the very essence of the mitzvah of Simcha. No longer is there an element of simcha comparable to Yantiv that envelops, that permeates the entire day. And one of the ways that we fulfill the mitzvah of simchas Yantiv is through achil and shtia, eating and drinking. But maybe now the focus shifts. Since it is not a Yantiv, therefore there are many mitzvos that we fulfill during the day of Purim. One of them is that there's an obligation of having a sudas Purim. And now the mitzvah of simcha simply is a function of the chiyuv suda. Whereas on Yantiv, one certainly would not argue that the primary chiyuv is sudas Yantiv, and the simcha is a function of suda. Maybe that's not true now when it comes to Purim. When it comes to Purim, the mitzvah is to have a sudas Purim, and in that framework of suda, there's an obligation of rejoicing during this particular time. If that's true, we understand very well that initially, when Purim was thought to be comparable to Yantiv, the primary mitzvah was one of simcha. And as a function of simcha, then there was a chiyuv suda. Now that that is not true, the primary mitzvah then of Purim is mishta, and that is a reflection of simcha, meaning that one is obligated on Purim to have a mishta shiyesh bo simcha. The Rambam, for example, writes the following. In Hilchos Yantif, as mentioned, Perek Vav, so many different possibilities in terms of fulfilling the mitzvah of Simchas Yantiv. How does one fulfill the mitzvah of Simchas Purim? So it's interesting. The Rambam Perek Beis of Hilchos Megillah does not mention the entire menu of possibilities of fulfilling the mitzvah of Simcha. The Rambam does not write that everyone is obligated to see to it that the day is a joyous one and to be mesamea kol anshei beiso. The Rambam begins with the following heading. Ketzat chova sudazu. There's a mitzvah of having a sudas Purim. And how is it that one fulfills this mitzvah? The famous statement of Rav Psachim Dav Zayin, Chayiv inish lemesume b'poraya adlo yada. A person is obligated to drink on Purim. When is that true? The Rambam begins, Ketzat chova sudazu. How do you fulfill the mitzvah of sudas Purim? The answer is the Rambam teaches in the context and framework of suda, then it's appropriate to drink. The clear impression that you get from the Rambam, Rzhalti comments, is that simcha is inherent to sudas Purim, but it's not something that comparable to Yantif permeates or envelops the entire day. For example, is one allowed to get married on Yantif? So certainly not. Aside from the details of making a kinin on Yantif, the Gemara tells us the following drasha. It's a drasha daraisa, v'samachta b'chagecha, v'lo b'ishtecha. That applies even on Chol HaMoed. After all, the simcha must be purely simchas Yantiv. One cannot go ahead and marry. Not only as Tosus writes the Din Darabanan of Ein Marbim Simcha the Simcha, but a Drasha Daraisa, the Samachta de Chagecha, Vlo Vishkecha. The Mechaber writes, Tafrei Starivav, one is allowed to get married on Purim. It is not considered to be a time of simcha that envelops the entire day, and there's no comparable halacha of the samachta bechagecha v'lo ishtecha. Or the Mechaber discusses the following halacha, the very same simin, Tafresh Sarivav. We know that there's no avelus during the period of Yantiv. Simchas Yantiv and avelus cannot coexist, and the mitzvah derabim of Simchas Yantiv takes precedence over the personal obligation of avelus. How does Purim impact on avelus? That's the machlokas, the Mechaber and the Ramah. The Mechaber writes that the dini avelus supply even on Purim, and Ramah disagrees. But apparently you see from that view of Mechaber that there's avelus on Purim that certainly even on a level of Darabonin we cannot equate Simchas Yontif, which is Soser, which contradicts avelus, to that of Purim. And perhaps that is the difference in the Megillah between Simcha Mishtav Yontif as opposed to Mishtav Simcha. If Purim would have been adopted as a Yontif, there would have been a mitzvah of Simcha that envelops the entire day. Since that was not the case, no doubt, there is a mitzvah of Sudas Purim, and part of Sudas Purim is to express the Simchas Purim, no doubt, but nonetheless it is not comparable, even Nidrabanan, to that time of Yontif itself. It's an interesting issue to what extent we assume that there is a chaloshem, a status of Purim as a day of simcha, aside from the particular mitzvahs. You know, when it comes to every yantiv, it's so clear that aside from the mitzvahs that we fulfill, there is a kedusha seyoma status that the day itself has. Aside, for example, on sukkahs, that there's a mitzvah of sukkah and a mitzvah of dalet minim, but yet it's considered to be zman simchaseinu. There is a kedusha seyoma, chaloshem yom. For example, we recite Shechiyonu on Sukkot. Why do we do so? For two very different reasons. The Gemara tells us, Sukkot Daf Mem Vav, there are mitzvot that we fulfill on Sukkot that are infrequently performed, and therefore that warrants a bracha of Shechiyonu. But the Gemara tells us in Erevin and Daf Mem, we also recite a bracha of Shechiyonu, not because of mitzvah sayom, but also because of kedusha sayom. The Shechiyonu, for example, recited during the day, clearly relates to Dalid Minim. What about the Shechiyonu at night? A twofold halacha. Shechiyonu on Kedusha Sayom, also Shechiyonu on the mitzvah of Yeshiva Sukkah. For whatever reason, a person is not sitting in Sukkah the first night of Sukkot, still the Shechiyonu is recited on Kedusha Sayom, even though there is no mitzvah Sayom. Rosh Hashanah, for example, the mitzvah of Tkiyah Shofar begins during the day. Shechiyonu at night is on Kedusha Sayom. And as we've discussed many times, there are marked differences between the bracha of Shechiyonu on Kedusha Sayom as opposed to Mitzvah Sayom. Is there a similar concept when it comes to Purim? Is Purim merely defined in terms of the mitzvahs that we fulfill? Obligations of Kriyas HaMegillah and Shalach Manos, Matan L'Sevyonim and Suda? Or should we argue, no, that there's a status of Chaloshem Yom that exists on Purim independent of the various mitzvah sayom that we fulfill? There's a fascinating comment of Hagos Maimonos. It's found in Hilchos Megillah, also found in Perek Beis of Hilchos Tefillah, where the Hagos Maimonos quotes the Chiddush of Rav Amram Gon. When do you begin reciting Al HaNisim? Rav Amram Gon writes the following Chiddush, that Al HaNisim cannot be recited until after the Kriya Samegillah. You first daven Mariv. But at that point in time, you have yet to fulfill any of the mitzvah sayom of Purim, and therefore of Amram Gon writes that at that point in time you cannot recite any Al HaNisim at that point. No, because after all, how have you manifest, how have you commemorated the fact that it's Purim? Only after the Kriyas HaMegillah is that done. And Hagos Maimonos disagrees, of course, as we assume the halacha, and maintains that no, even at Marav one can begin reciting Al HaNisim in Shmon Esrei. That's the comment that the Ramah writes in Tafrei Sari Gimel, that you begin saying Al HaNisim at night. If you don't know the background, you read it, and isn't that obvious? Of course you begin at night. You always begin the main hour at night. No, the Chiddush, the Ramah, is that we pass like a Ghost Maimonos against that view of Rav Amram Gon. Because Rav Amram Gon was of the opinion that at night in Marav one does not recite Al HaNisim. Why is that true? Would anyone argue, for example, at the Lel Seder, that you can't recite Yalav Yavo until after you fulfill the mitzvah of Achilas Matzah? Certainly not. There.
We recite the main Hamor of Yalav Yavam not because of the mitzvah that we are about to fulfill, but rather because of the Kedushas Hayom of Chag HaMatzos, of Yantiv. And that exists independent of any mitzvah. Would anyone argue that if you don't have a sukkah, therefore you don't have any Yantiv Shmon Esrei? Certainly not. Kedushas Hayom requires that tefillah. But when it comes to Purim, can we speak about that concept, that essence of a Kedushas Hayom, a Chaloshem Yom, that could argue that of course you recite Al HaNisim independent of, as of yet, fulfilling any mitzvah? That's the Chiddush of Rav Amram Gaon, that apparently Purim is defined not in its essence, but rather as a function of its mitzvahs, and therefore until the mitzvah of Kriyas HaMegil is fulfilled, you don't even recite Al HaNisim. In fact, the Magen Avraham refers you to this Chiddush in the following context. Magen Avraham discusses when you have a leap year and you have an Adar Rishon and Adar Sheni. When is it that you celebrate Purim? The Gemara has two possibilities. Either Adar Rishon because of Zrizim Akdim in the Mitzvos, but look, why not seize the first opportunity to fulfill the Mitzvos Hayom? Or as we assume Halacha that know that Nismach Gu'ul Gula Adiv, it is better to narrow the window of time between Purim and Pesach, and therefore we of course wait until Adar Sheni. Rostovichik once pointed out, the fact that the Gemara raises the issue, and the answer of the Gemara is Rizim Atimim or Mismach Gula Gula, seems to indicate that both have the status of Adar. After all, that if Adarishan was not really Adar, and rather it was Adar Sheni, so in such a case you can't argue Zrizim Atimim. Zrizim Atimim means that you have two possibilities. It is best to do it at the earliest opportune moment. Good? But the assumption is that would be called Adar. If, for example, Adar Sheni didn't have the status of Adar, so therefore, what do you mean Nismach Gula Gula Adiv? Good, you want to narrow the gap between Pesach and Purim, but nonetheless it has to be during the time of Adar. The Rav would often comment, the fact that the Gemara is willing to apply these principles of Zrizim Akdimim, Mismach Gula Gula, seems to indicate that inherently the Chefza both have the status of Adar. For example, the Gon writes, if a person has a Yartzeit during Adar, so therefore it should be commemorated in both Adar Rishon as well as Adar Sheni, because in essence, both have the status of Adar. Do you say Al HaNisim and Purim Katan and Adar Rishon? We opt for the view of the Gemara, of course, Mismach Gula Gula Adiv, and therefore we wait until Adar Sheni. But if you're arguing that in principle, Purim Katan also has the status of Yedalim Tesvav Adar, so if that's true, is there any basis to assume that you should recite Al HaNisim at that particular time? Machlokas and Achronim. The Magen Avraham writes that you don't, and he cites this view of Rav Amram Gaon. Rav Amram Gaon assumes that even on Purim itself, one does not begin reciting Al HaNisim until after Kriyas HaMegillah. And even though we don't accept this Chiddush Rav Amram Gaon, we recite Al HaNisim at Maariv, even though as of yet there is no Kriyas HaMegillah, but nonetheless, at least on that day, it's a time in which the mitzvah Siyam were fulfilled. However, when it comes to Purim Katan, Adar Rishon, there are no mitzvah Siyam. So therefore, as we assume Lahalacha, you can't recite Al HaNisim, because there's no independent status aside from the opportunity to fulfill the mitzvahs of Purim, and since that is not done on Adar Rishon, there's no recitation of Al HaNisim as well. It's an interesting issue even when it comes to Purim Meshulash, the very end of Hilchos Purim, Tafresh Peches, what happens if Tesvav falls out on Shabbos? We in Chutz Laretz cannot have our celebration of Purim Yudalid, which would fall on Shabbos, but of course if we have Purim on a Friday in Yerushalayim, it is Tesvav. How is that commemorated? The difficulty is the following. One issue is Kriyas HaMegillah. After all, we know the Gzer Derabba, that you can't be Tokeh B'Shofar, Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, you can't be Noto Dalet Minim on Sukkah Shechalios B'Shabbos, you can't have a Kriyas HaMegillah when Purim falls out on Shabbos. So therefore, then even in Irmuk of Chomo, read the Megillah on the earlier day, on Friday. What about the obligation of having a Sudas Purim? Can you have the Sudas Purim on Shabbos? The Yerushalmi writes that you can't. The Yerushalmi quotes this posuk, Lasososam, Yimei Mishta V'Simcha. Part of our obligation is to convert the day into a day of Mishta V'Simcha. The Yerushalmi writes, not true of Shabbos. Shabbos, in and of itself, is already considered to be a day of Simcha. Interesting Chiddush in the Yerushalmi, that there's an obligation element of Simcha even on Shabbos. We normally associate Simcha with Yantif, on Shabbos, there's the mitzvah of kavod and oneg, as we discussed many times. But the Yerushalmi writes, there are elements in a mitzvah of simcha, even when it comes to Shabbos itself. So the Sudas Purim, you're not going to have on Shabbos, the Yerushalmi writes. You're not going to have Kriyas HaMegillah on Shabbos. So therefore, what in fact do you do? A lengthy discussion in Beis Yosef. Here the Mechaber writes the following, that he found an earlier Mesorah, that the practice which is most common, and that is that the Kriyas HaMegillah is on Friday, the Sudas Purim is on Sunday, and what happens on Shabbos? So that's what the Mechaber writes. Alanisim, interesting Chiddush. The Beis Yosef himself questions whether that should be the case. Can you recite Alanisim on what should be their day of Purim, Tesvav Adar, when there's no Kriyas HaMegillah, there's no Sudas Purim? Can you recite Alanisim at that particular time? Is there a Chaloshem, a special elevated, enhanced status or Kedusha that day has, if you're going to tell me that there are no mitzvos that apply during that window of time? This is what the Beis Yosef debates, and this is the Mechaber. In the very end of Hilchos Purim, the possibility of reciting Alanisim and Purim Meshulos on Shabbos, even though that the mitzvah seyum will not be expressed at that particular time. Mishneh Berurah even discusses the following issue in Bir Halacha. The Miri discusses this as well when it comes to Chanukah, applicable in Purim also. We mentioned the bracha of Shechianu. Shechianu on Purim, no doubt, applies to the mitzvah seyum. We recite a Shechianu for the mitzvah of Kriyas HaMegillah. But is there a Shechianu on the Kedusha Sayom, on the Chaloshem Yom? Let's assume, for example, that for whatever reason, a person would not hear the Megillah at all. Would that individual recite a bracha of Shechianu? The Gemara doesn't discuss Purim. The Gemara discusses Chanukah. The Gemara tells us in Shabbos, and Daf Chaf Aleph, what happens in the following instance, that the person, let's say, is lighting the menorah, all three brachos are recited. What about a person who is not lighting? Haroeh, mevarech shtayim. Two brachos are recited. The bracha of Shasanisi and the bracha of Shechianu. What does haroeh mean? A person, for whatever reason, he doesn't have a home, so therefore he can't light, but at least he sees. Is it crucial that he see? What happens if he doesn't see at all? What happens if a person finds himself in an isolated area where he doesn't light and he doesn't even see, perceive of the Ner Chanukah? One could argue that no, that the mitzvah and the bracha of Shechianu and Shasanisim has to relate to Ner Chanukah. In the Chiddush of the Gemara is it can relate in one of two ways, either through Hadlaka or through Re'iyah. Or maybe one could argue that no. The fact that even without Hadlaka you can recite a bracha of Shasanisim or Shechianu indicates that a bracha of Shasanisim or Shechianu can be recited on the status of the day. The Lashon of the Shiltos, Yomed Yisracha Nisa LiYisrael, a day in which a nes occurs, you can go ahead and do so. The Miri writes in that sugya, very great Chiddush, that Haroeh is Lav Dafka. The Gemara just mentions the normal occurrence. If for whatever reason a person can't light, but at least he'll be able to see the Ner Chanukah, but that's not critical. Even if a person does not see at all, the bracha can nonetheless be recited acknowledging that Chanukah is a Yomad Yisrachesh Nisa Yisrael. There is a Chaloshem, an elevated status that the day has, independent, irrespective of the mitzvot that you fulfill at that particular time. This apparently is our issue when it comes to Purim. Is there a Chaloshem Yom, a day of Simcha, independent of mitzvot? Or should we assume that no, that Purim is comprised of the various mitzvot Sayom, but perhaps one cannot recite the bracha of Shechianu on the Chaloshem, on the Kedusha Sayom of the time of Purim itself? Even the discussion in Megillah and Daf Yudalid regarding Hallel could relate to this issue as well. Hallel we recite on Yantiv. Why is that true? The Ramban writes, that's a function of the mitzvah of Simcha. The Ramban deals with the view of Halachos Gedolos that maintains that Hallel is a mitzvah min HaTorah. Where do you see that this is true? Where does the Torah mandate the requirement of Hallel? One possibility Ramban writes is Halacha Moshe Misinai. The second possibility Ramban in the very beginning of Sefer HaMitzvos is, this is part of the mitzvah of Simcha. Simcha, as the Rambam writes, doesn't simply mean Simchas Kreso, a person eats and drinks. Part of the message of Simcha is Shevach V'Hodah, and therefore Hallel is an inherent part of the mitzvah of Simcha. And therefore, whenever there is Simcha, there should be a mitzvah of Hallel. In fact, the Mormon Erech in Adaf Yud mentions that why is it that we don't recite Hallel on Rosh Hashanah? No? Perhaps that's an indicator that there is a mitzvah of simcha on Rosh Hashanah. Otherwise, why would one suggest that Hallel, in fact, should be recited? And yet, this is exactly what the Gemara questions, Megillah Daf Yudalit, why is it that we don't recite Hallel on Purim? And the Gemara has three possibilities in its answer. One possibility is the following, that we don't recite Hallel on a Nes in Chutz Laretz. Only on Nisim in Eretz Yisrael, that is when Hallel is in fact recited. Chanukah, yes, and Purim, no. The other possibility is Rav Nachman, that Kriyasa Zui Halayla, the Kriyasa Megillah itself, is a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Hallel. The Meiri argues, a striking chiddush, that if for whatever reason a person does not have a Megillah, will not hear the Kriyasa Megillah, he is obligated to recite Hallel, a very great chiddush. Kriyasa Zui Halayla does not really mean that in place of. There is in principle a chi of Hallel fulfilled via the Kriyas HaMegillah. For whatever reason, if that's not true, one is obligated to recite Hallel. The Gemara quotes a third possibility of Rava, but no, that Purim is not a time of pristine simcha. After all, Akate Avdei HaChashverosh Hanan. We recite Hallel, simcha, when we speak about Gulas Mitzrayim, Mi'avdus L'Cheirus. However, we acknowledge the Nisim that occurred on Purim, but nonetheless the Geula was incomplete, and therefore, since Akate Avdei HaChashverosh Hanan, no Hallel is recited. The way the Miri explains, according to Rav Nachman in principle, of course Hallel, according to Rava, that no, there is no Hallel. Akate Avdei HaChashverosh Hanan. This discussion, to what extent we recite Hallel, is linked in some sense to our issue. Is Purim simply comprised of mitzvah sayom, or is there an element of simcha comparable to simchas yantiv that would allow, for example, to the recitation of Hallel at this particular time? Even the other mitzvahs that we fulfill, the mitzvah, for example, of mishloach manos ish l'rieihu, is also linked to the obligation of simcha and sudas Purim. What is the very purpose of the mitzvah of shalach manos? The Truma Sedeshin writes in Simen Kuf Yud Aleph that one of the mitzvahs hayom is sudas Purim. You're obligated to have a festive suda. In order to see to it that a person will have the necessary provisions for suda, therefore we're obligated in mishloach manos ish l'rieihu. That's the Chiddush of Truma Sedeshin. The purpose of mishloach manos is in order to see to it that everyone will have b'shefa, the Truma Sedeshin writes, an abundance of food to fulfill the obligation of sudas Purim. It is interesting, when you look in the Sefer Manos Halevi, one has to be careful, because the Sefer Manos Halevi is not a Sefer Lahalacha, but rather a Sefer Drush HaPirush on Megillas Esther. It was written by Rav Shlomo Alkabetz, the Mechaber of the Piyut, L'Chadodi, that everyone recites. There he argues the following. What is driving the mitzvah Mishloach Manos? Simply, Tosefes Reus. No, we want to manifest friendship. Ava v'yachva, Shalom v'reus. We're accused in the Megillah as being an Am Echad, Mefuzer Mefar Ben Amim, and therefore the purpose of Mishloach Manos Ish L'Reihu is in order to emphasize that element of Reus. Truma Sedeshin writes the purpose of Mishloach Manos to contribute to one's Sudas Purim. The Manos Levi writes, Al Pidrush, that the purpose is in order to enhance Reus. The reason I mention again, one has to be careful, because Lahalacha, can one necessarily assume that these are two independent shitas with nafkaminas? One always has to be careful of doing so. There is, however, Tshuvach Sam Sofer, Kuf Tzarivav, where Sam Sofer assumes that these are two independent reasons for the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos, and Sam Sofer rattles off nafkaminas then. Whether the purpose of Mishloach Manos is to contribute to one's Sudas Purim, or whether it's simply in order to promote friendship in Ahavas Yisrael. The Vilna Gaon is quoted as a Rashi that you find in Beis and Daf Yud Aleph, a very different context. When you're giving a gift on Yantif, what type of gift are you allowed to give? Beis Shammai is of the opinion that Ein Meshalchen Ela Manos. You have to give a mana. What is the definition of mana? Rashi writes, Davar Haraya V'muchan La'achila. It has to be something that is fit to be eaten, something that a person can immediately use as the Suda. The Magen Avraham refers to this. The Vilna Gaon would give Basar V'yayin for Shalach Manas. Give someone that which he will use for his Sudas Purim. Something that does not require preparation, but rather something that is absolutely royal achila. Apparently, in line with what the Truma Sedeshin writes, the purpose of Mishloach Manos is to contribute to one's Sudas Purim. We had mentioned earlier that Chiddush of the Rambam, Paratezit Hilchos Megillah, the Rambam discusses the obligation of Simchas Purim and the obligation of Mishloach Manos. The Rambam begins that heading, Kesar Chovas Sudazu, seeming to indicate that these are not independent mitzvahs, but all are driven by the obligation of Sudas Purim. If one should assume that it's for the opportunity of Reus, so in such an instance, perhaps it is not necessary to give that which is Muchan Baray Lachila. Ochel, yes, but perhaps not necessarily something that the person will automatically use for his Sudas Purim. The Achronim discuss what happens, for example, if it's a ben krach and a ben ir. Let's say, for example, a person is celebrating Purim for him today because he's a ben Yerushalayim. Can he give shalach manos to a person, a ben ir, who for them Purim was yesterday? If the purpose is to contribute to Sudas Purim, then no. If the purpose is to manifest reyus, then perhaps one could argue that certainly is the case. Or, for example, the Ritva raises in Dav Zayin in Megillah, let's assume that we're dealing with an Adam Chashuv. Either the Nosein or the Mekabel is a very prominent individual. Does that affect what you are giving in terms of Shalach Manos? The Ritva writes that yes. If it is an Adam Chashuv, so therefore it has to be a Dover HaMechubad, which is used for the purpose of Shalach Manos. One could understand that in different ways depending on what is driving that obligation of Mishloach Manos. If you'll argue it's the purpose of contributing to one Suda, l'chor you have to give something that the recipient will view as a davar chashuv and use for his Sudas Purim. Perhaps if it's for the purpose of Reus, maybe then it's not dependent on the Mekabel, but rather the Nosein. If a person wants to demonstrate Reus, so therefore he should give something that he would consider to be a davar chashuv. Perhaps one could argue if a wealthy individual gives something which is tiny to an individual who is poor, right? Even if he'll use it for the Sudas Purim, maybe that is not a full manifestation of that element of Reus. Ksav Sofer even writes in Simen Kuf Mem Aleph, the following Chiddush, can one give Shalach Manos anonymously? No? Do you have to know who is it that is doing so? Maybe one could argue again, if the purpose is to see to it, that the person has the necessary food and provisions for Sudas Purim, so therefore it makes no difference whether it comes from A, B, or C, as long as he receives that is sufficient. If it's for the purpose of promotion of Reyes, maybe yes, maybe no, but Ksav Sofer writes, then it's important to realize who is giving, who is the one who is demonstrating that sense. Right, so it could be that both elements certainly would apply. And even if you assume that you're dealing with an usher who will have minimally what is necessary, maybe there is an enhancement which is necessary through Shalach Manos. The way the Ran presents it, it seems that there's a clear link between Shalach Manos and Matan L'Sev Yonim. The Ran presents it as follows, a very, very great Chiddush, that if you're dealing with an usher, so therefore the way the Ran presents it is that he has what's necessary for a Suda. So therefore, give him a mana. Give him a type of delicacy, something that will enhance the Suda. If you're dealing with an Ani, who doesn't have the basic necessities, then give him matanos levyonim. Give him simply funds that he can go out and purchase whatever he needs. You're going to give him some delicacy when he doesn't have the basics for a Suda. And therefore, that's the difference. The Ran seems to write a great Chiddush. Why two manos are necessary for Shalach Manos, one is sufficient for Matan L'Sev Yonim, why one is considered to be a food item, one considered to be an amount of money. But perhaps again, that these two issues certainly are linked. The Rama writes a Chiddush that Mechila works when it comes to Shalach Manos. Right? Let's assume, for example, I offer a person Shalach Manos, and he refuses to accept. Or he tells me in a very pleasant way, it's not necessary. He has so much, he won't be able to get rid of it by the time that Pesach will come. The Rama writes a Chiddush that even if he doesn't accept or is mochel, one nonetheless fulfills the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos with that effort. Perhaps to some extent as well, right, that can relate to the two reasons for the obligation of Mishloach Manos. But clearly, the way the Truma Sedeshin explains that Shalach Manos, Matanos Evinim are also rooted in the obligation of Mishta V'Simcha, to see to it that the Suda of an Asher is enhanced, and to see to it that an Ani certainly has what is necessary to fulfill the Chiyuv Suda. The Gemara tells a fascinating story in Sachem of Zayin and Beis between Rabbi Yudin Nasi and Rabbi Oshia regarding giving Matanos on Purim. Different yourselves, however, in that exact episode. What we have is the following, that Rabbi Yudin Nasi gave Rabbi Oshia the following, Amta de Egla Tilsa, that means a thigh, a piece of meat of an egel, and also he gave him the Garba Yayin, he gave him a container, a jug of wine. The Gersa that we have in the Gemara is, by doing so, Rabbi Yudin Nasiya fulfilled the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos Ish Narehu and Matanos Levyon. Rabbeinu Chananel has a very different Gersa based on the Yerushalmi. Rabbeinu Chananel writes the following, that no, Rabbi Yudin Nasiya gave Rabbi Oshia again a piece of meat together with wine, and the response was the following, that by doing so, you do not fulfill the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos Ish Narehu. That was not fulfilled. Why wasn't it fulfilled? Rabbeinu Chananel explains, because he only gave mana achas. He only gained one food type. He didn't give two manos, two types, which are necessary for the obligation of Mishloach Manos. What then happened? Rabbeinu Chananel continued. If that's the case, that Rabbi Yudin Nasiya didn't fulfill the mitzvah of Shalach Manos, so therefore he gave an additional gift to Rabbi Oshia. He gave him an entire egel, not just simply the amta de egla tilsa, just a piece of the thigh, and he gave him gimel garbe yayin, and he gave him an abundance of wine, and through that, he fulfilled the mitzvah of Shalach Manos. So again, Rabbeinu Chananel's gears in the Gemara, that initially Rabbi Yudin Nasiya gave Rav Oshia a piece of meat and wine, that was insufficient, that was only a single mana, and therefore he rectified the problem by giving him an entire egel together with wine. What exactly was the problem? Why is it that he wasn't Yotzei? But Tzipei Yitzchak Frank in Mikrei Kodesh in Siman Lamed Ches writes that according to this Chiddush of Rabbeinu Chananel, you see three very important halachos regarding Shalach Manos, each one that is discussed at length in the poskim, in the achronim, the following chiddush. Why is it that he didn't fulfill the mitzvah of Shalach Manos by giving the amteg on gutilsa, by giving a piece of meat together with wine? What was wrong with that? Ratzi Pesa Frank writes, the chiddush according to Rabbeinu Chananel is in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos, you must give food, you cannot give a mashga, a beverage. That's the shita of Rabbeinu Chananel. So therefore, he gave a piece of meat together with wine. Rabbeinu Chananel writes that was only mana achas. It was only a single type. The wine does not count. So what happened? So Rabbi Yudin Nasiya went and he gave Rav Oshia, right, an additional piece of meat. Now he gave him an egla tilsa. He gave him the entire egel. How is that considered to be two manos? But Tzipei Yitzchak Frank points out, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, a further chiddush, that the two manos do not have to be given simultaneously. You can give one, and afterwards give the second, and they will combine for the purpose of Shalach Manos. A very interesting chiddush. And then the third issue. So what were the two manos then? If the wine doesn't count, so the first mana was a part of the egel, and the second mana was the egel. So further chiddush of Tzipei Yitzchak Frank writes, you see according to Rabbeinu Chananel, that al pidin, two types of meat are called shnei minim, and therefore the mitzvah of Shalach Manos is fulfilled. So Rav Yitzchak Frank writes that small story that the Gemara tells us, three crucial halachos, that's the heading of the piece, the tlase hilchos of the pirush Rabbeinu Chananel, three halachos of Shalach Manos that you derive from this line in Rabbeinu Chananel. And each one, of course, is a very great chiddush. We assume a halacha like the Magen Avram, that beverages can be given for the purpose of Shalach Manos. Against this diuk, we assume, however, like the chida, that the two manos must be given simultaneously, bevasachas, not bezecherze. And we also assume, as Eish Lavram writes in Aruch HaShulchan, that one should not give just two different types of meat, but two absolutely distinct manos against all three diyukim of this Rabbeinu Hananel. But Tzipes Frank points out the following chiddush, however. If you look in the Ritva understands the story slightly differently, and that changes everything. We had mentioned before, the Ritva says that if a person gives shalach manos, so if you're dealing with an adam chashuv, so therefore, the type of gift that he gives has to be in accordance with what he has. If an usher is giving to an ani, and he gives him something which is relatively little, so therefore, the mitzvah shalach manos is not fulfilled. That's how the Ritva understands this episode of Rabbi Nasir Rabbi Oshia. Rabbi Nasir was known as being exceedingly wealthy. And he gave Rabbi Oshia amta de egla, a very small piece of meat. That's how the Ritva understands, against Rabbi Nachananel, that small piece of meat was insufficient to be called a mana for the purpose of shalach manas. It's interesting. If that's true, so why is it that we argue that, you know what? That Rabbi Yudin Asiyah only gave Rabbi Oshia a single mana. According to the Ritva, it's the opposite. No, the meat was not a davar chashuv, so that does not count, but the yayin was the single mana. Therefore, the deal could be the opposite of Rabbeinu Hananel, and that is that apparently you see that yayin can be used for the purpose of shalach manos. The meat was the problematic one, not the yayin. So I ask you a simple question. So therefore, he didn't fulfill the mitzvah because the basar, no, but the yayin, yes. What did Rabbi Nasiya do? Hadar shalach leh, he sent then a hefty piece of meat, an entire egel together with wine. Why was it necessary to send the wine a second time? The answer is, because shalach manos must be vasachas, not bazar chazeh. The exact opposite of the diuk of Rabbeinu Hananel. And if he gave him an iglet also, such a hefty animal, made up of so many different cuts of beef, why was it necessary to give the garbe yayin? Apparently exactly as Eishel Avram and Aruch HaShulchan, that with shnei minei basar, that is considered to be a single min, and not shnei minim. That small difference in the story between Rabbeinu Hananel and Ritva, these three nafkaminas, when it comes to shalach manas, how in fact it should be given. We use some halach as mentioned, like mug and avram, that yayin certainly can be given, the beverage does count, but we are machmir that should be given basachas, and one should be careful to give two distinct minim for the purpose of shalach manas. That's what Tzipei Safrank points out, that simply when the Gemara says, in Yerushalmi mana achas, whether that single mana was the basar or the yayin makes a world of difference in terms of the details of this obligation of Mishloach Manas. There are many unique elements to what it is that we are supposed to glean from the obligation of Purim and its mitzvah of Simcha. I mentioned in the last year that Purim is unique in the sense that it commemorates Nisim that were performed in a time of Hester Panim. When we speak about Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, there we speak about Nisim Gluim, where one cannot but admit that everything that occurs as a result of the Yad Hashem, undeniably. When it comes to Purim, it's quite different. Just as the Shem Hashem is absent from the Megillah itself, it's very easy for a person to see the events that would unfold during the Kriyas HaMegillah and not see that as a result of Hashkachas Hashem. The Gaon writes in his Pirush to Megillas Esther, the uniqueness of Purim is to be able to recognize the Yad Hashem even in a time of Hester Panim as well. And in fact, even if it's difficult, when one experiences each moment of Geula, to realize that this is all Hashkachas Hashem, but in context, in the aftermath, when all the pieces unfold, it is so clear, so evident, that everything is a result of Yad and Hashkachas Hashem. Perhaps that's why when you read the Megillah, you can't just read the column which is in front of you, but Poshto Ki Igeris. You're obligated to open up the entire Megillah when you lay in order to realize that if Rachmana Litzlan, you'll tell me, this episode was incidental, this was natural. As the Megillah unfolds and all the pieces fall into place, one can never deny Hashkachas Hashem. And that's what the Ramban writes is the very lesson of all Nisim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu performs. The Ramban writes in the very end of Parshas Bo, that the Mitoch HaNisim HaGluyim HaMaforsamim Adam Modeb Nisim HaNistarim. It's only when HaKadosh Baruch Hu performs a Nes Nigla. It's not just for that Nes. But if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is capable of Kriyas Yamsuf and Oso Sumosim, so certainly
HaMechadesh B'tuvah B'chol Yom Tamid, that we're able to recognize that everything that occurs is a direct result of Hashkachas Hashem. Sometimes in a time of Hester Panim, it's most difficult to realize that challenge. And that is part of our obligation to celebrate in order to recognize Hashkachas Hashem, even in a climate or environment that others can dismiss as being natural, as being routine, as being mundane. That is the challenge of Purim. But yet we acknowledge that, as Rava says, Akate Avdei Achashverosh Hanan, that Purim did not result in ultimate geula. And therefore, even as we celebrate Purim, we have to be very mindful of that's true. I mentioned to you once before, perhaps a contradiction in the statements of Rava. That Rava, at Megillah Daf Yudalid, you don't recite Hallel because Akate Avdei Achashverosh Hanan. How is it that Avodim can recite Hallel in that fashion? And yet Rav is the very same one, just a few about earlier, Megillah Dav Zayin with Beis, Mechayiv Inish Lemesu B'Paraya. A person is obligated to drink and to be Mali Simcha during the time of Purim. Is that a contradiction? Chayiv Inish Lemesu B'Paraya, and at the same time not to recite Hallel. So perhaps one could suggest, not only is that a contradiction, but this is the very same Shita of Rav. We acknowledge that Purim is a time of Hester Panim, even though there is so much to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for in the Nisim of Purim, but yet we mark the fact that Akate Avdei Achashverosh Hanan, it's a time of Hester Panim. And how one relates in a time of Hester Panim is very different than a time of a great Gilui Shechina. And the Torah tells us in Parsha Shmini, when a person has the skills of being Bifnei Hashem, and that's the definition of Simcha. That's what the Gemara tells us in Megillah and Daf Yudalid. When a person finds himself in the Mikdash Hashem with Hashras Hashchina, that is Simcha. V'samachta Lifnei Hashem Elokecha. When do we experience that? On Shalosh Regalim. When does the Kohen Gadol experience Simcha? The Gemara tells us, Kohen Gadol B'Shayim Os Hashana, Ki Yisrael B'Regal Damya. What does that mean? Soloveitchik explained, we have a Chiyuv to be in Beis HaMikdash 3 times a year. Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. The Kohen Gadol is obligated to be in Mikdash continuously. Lashon HaRambam Eino Zaz Misham. He can't leave Yerushalayim. And Chaschinach writes, every day, the Kohen Gadol either offers or on his behalf a karban is offered. The Minchas Chavitim. When you offer a karban, there's halach of lima. You can't leave the city. You have to be within the city the entire day. The Kohen Gadol always must find himself in the Mikdash Hashem. And that's why the Gemara says the Kohen Gadol can never experience Nihugi Avelus. Because Avelus and Simcha contradict. Being in the Mikdash Hashem is the ultimate Simcha. And when we recognize that Purim is a time of Hester Panim, that we still live in a time of Churban, we have to realize that the Simcha is somewhat tempered. Not comparable to Simchas Yantif with Avila Regel, but rather, you may mishtavis Simcha, elements of Simcha, but rather not Simcha comparable, as I mentioned, to that of Yantif itself. When a person is in the presence of the Mikdash Hashem, that's when the Torah posits this Siddharaisa, Yayin v'Sheichar Alteisht. A person is never allowed, Rachman Litzlan, to take a sip, to intoxicate himself, being in the Mikdash Hashem, as though that somehow he has to artificially stimulate that sense of Simcha. That's wholly inappropriate. One finds himself in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Perhaps the reason that Rava tells us, Mechayiv Inish Lemesun B'Paraya, is in order to emphasize that element of Hester Panim. Perfectly consistent. But Rava tells us, Akate Avdei Achashverosh Hanan. We acknowledge the great Nisan that occurred of Purim. But we beseech HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the Geula of Purim was not the ultimate Geula Hasidah. And therefore, we demonstrate this fact through Mechayiv Inish Lebesuma Poraya. The drinking on Purim is not necessarily a manifestation of Simcha. Maybe the opposite is true. It's a manifestation of that sense of Hester Panim. And therefore, the two statements of Rava are perfectly consistent. And therefore, we don't recite Hallel. And even according to Rav Nachman, we don't recite the overt Hallel. Even the Hallel is recited in a sense of Hester Panim. The Hallel is concealed through the Kriyas HaMegillah, the overt Hallel. That is reserved for a time of ultimate Geula, or during the time of Yontif, when we celebrate that greatest sense of Hashras HaShchina. It's important to be aware of that sense of balance, that even when celebrates Simchas Purim, to be mindful of Rava's lesson, Akate Avdei Hashem Shanan, with the hope and the tefillos that as we celebrate Purim, we'll be able, Bezras Hashem, to celebrate, to commemorate the Gula Hasida in Hera of Yamin.
Mm-hmm.